Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. I'm Ghost Joe.
I'm Creepy Ken.
That's Creepy Ken, man. Listen, last week's episode was freaking awesome, man. I loved having Edgegrave Dave on the show. It was super, super fun.
Yeah, very fun.
Yeah, yeah. He's a very, very funny guy, you know? And he knows his stuff, man. He definitely knows his stuff.
I'll tell you, I will give it to him. He really does know it. And apparently I know porn, so... We've got to get on that.
Yeah, for real. I mean, you know, sure. So this episode, this one is actually an episode I've been wanting to do for a while. And it's not good when I was by myself on this show and I'm talking by myself, because then it just sounds like I'm weird and crazy, you know, going back and forth. So it's good to actually have a co-host now, you know, and instead of like what I used to do is sometimes I would have like I'd put like a sock on my hand and we'd go back and forth.
Whoa, hold on.
You know?
Wait, I'm so confused. What are you doing with the sock?
What?
What are you doing with the sock?
Put it on my hand, you know, I'd paint little eyeballs on it.
You know? I thought it was a different kind of sock, bro.
No.
I'm like, what are you doing on this podcast, man?
God. Right down the crapper.
That's the way it goes with me. I'm sorry.
So,
because more of your friends' kids won't be listening now.
That's it. That's it. You know, it's all right. That's all right. So this episode is all about the Amityville Horror House. Let's call it that. All right. And the whole lore behind it. And kind of, I think me and Ken might have some different views on it. So I think that'll make for a very interesting show.
True, true, true.
So, I mean, and it's funny too, because people that know, at least that know me, might not think that I have this kind of view. You know, because normally I go the other way.
That's what she said.
You know?
Oh, I got one too. Hold on.
That's what she said.
But we're going to get sued now. We're going to get sued.
No, we won't. Nobody gives a crap about our podcast.
That's Steve Carell saying it, man.
Yeah, but Steve Carell cares that a podcast with two listeners is going to jump on that.
Damn, come on, man.
Okay, man. Four listeners.
That's right. So
they don't care. This is all used for entertainment. They don't care about that.
That's true. All right. So let me get this started. Okay. I have my notes set up here. All right. So every night, gently apply the ointment to the shaft, and in just 2 weeks, watch it grow. Oh, that's the wrong script.
That wasn't even a script, damn bro. I think your other hand was typing that.
I think your other hand was typing that.
You truly are a genius if you can do that at the same time.
So on November 13th, 1974, Ronald DeFeo Jr., who was 23 at the time, murdered six of his family members at 112 Ocean Avenue in Amityville, Long Island, New York. The victims were his parents, Ronald Sr. and Lois Luis. They were both 43 years old, and his four siblings, Dawn 18, Allison 13, Mark 12, and John 9.
This sounds like Bible verses.
Right? I know. Mark and John, right?
Yeah.
No, but, you know, there are some weird things about it. You know, as far as, you know, he used a high-powered rifle, right? Was it a rifle or a shotgun? It was a high-powered firearm.
It was a rifle. Yeah. It was a 35-millimeter Marlin.
See, I knew the Southern guy would know that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually Northern, but transplant.
Okay, whatever. So it's okay. Whatever. You're still Southern now. Okay.
Okay. We'll go with it.
No, but what's crazy though is that this happened at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and apparently the neighbors. Now I've been to this neighborhood before. Because I've visited the house because I live in New York, so why the hell wouldn't I, right?
Right.
The houses are right near each other, like they're literally like 50 feet, not even 50 feet away from each other. These houses. So how? Really?
See, I was going to ask you that if you've been there and if you know how close, because I know you're getting to it here, so I'll just let you go with it. But it's bothering me about that.
Yeah. So. Why, like, how did they not hear the gunshots go off at 3 o'clock in the morning? Obviously, everything's nice and quiet. It was November, so, you know, usually, like, all right, November nights, Long Island, Suffolk County, it's quiet there, you know? Nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
How did they not hear six high-powered rifle shots going off at 3 o'clock in the morning? You know?
I don't know.
That's the one thing that really trips me up about this. Now, when I said before about people might not think that, you know, my view would be my normal view on things, because normally I'm the believer, you know, normally I side on the believer side. This one, not so much, man. Not so much. I mean, there are inconsistencies, but. I don't know. I just, maybe you could convince me today, you know, but, well, you know, but there are certain things, you know, like what I just said. There's a lot of theories that go on with it. One of which is that Ronald DeFeo Jr.'s father was involved in the mafia. You know, there's a whole bunch of different kinds of theories. One theory that definitely is not a theory, though, that I will say before you get started here, is that Ronald DeFeo Jr. was a drug addict or a junkie. You know, like he used to do LSD and all sorts of crazy drugs. So that's one thing that is fact.
And he was an alcoholic.
Right. I mean, he had some substance abuse problems. Now, mind you, all this happened. You know, that night he went to a bar or whatever, and then the next day they caught him, they found him, they put him in jail. And he was in jail for like 40-something years until 2020 when he finally passed away in Greenhaven Correctional Facility. Yeah, so, you know, good riddance to that, you know. I'm just going to say it because, fuck it. Good riddance to that motherfucker, you know, for killing his whole family.
Finish him.
You know? That's it. You know, he's a monster, bro. Like, I don't, you know, whether the house made you do it, or you're a monster for killing, you know, your poor innocent siblings like that. But anyway.
Agreed.
Go on, man. Let me hear what you got.
So another thing that really bothers me about this, let's just play off of that. Neighbors didn't hear it, okay? All six of the family members were all found basically in the same position, face down on the bed. Now, it's a big house. It's a really big house, okay? But I'm pretty sure that if you're off a 35-millimeter Marlin rifle in a house, it really doesn't matter how big it is. That's going to wake somebody up. There was no silencer on this weapon, none whatsoever. So nobody tried to get away. It was almost like the family had been drugged beforehand because there was no signs of struggle. They were all in the same position. They were all sleeping when this happened. This is all confirmed stuff. And you know, that was part of the thing was, boy, were they drugged? But the coroner results came back that they were not drugged.
Right.
That part's already always bothered me.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely, yeah, I agree with you on that too. Why or how did they not? Now, mind you, it was 1974, but I don't want to say that they were too primitive back then. I mean, of course, things were different. you know, DNA wasn't like the way it is now, you know, as far as testing and all this stuff. But I would think that in 1974, they'd be able to tell if the bodies were moved from one location and put back on the bed, you know, face down. I would think that they'd be able to at least tell that. And you know what I mean? You know, looking at all the 70s movies and Serpico and all that stuff, you know, like, you know, they were pretty smart back then. You know, the police work. The police work was pretty good back then. So,
yeah,
I don't know, man. Like, that's the one thing that does kind of trip me up about it, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty worrisome, that part. It's just strange. The neighbors didn't hear it. The other family members didn't try to get away. The whole thing is strange, even to the point where, you know, you're speaking about DeFeo's father was involved with the mob. Really, the only reason that got started that way was because the murders happened at 3 o'clock in the morning. DeFeo waited until 6 p.m. the next day because he was on a bender to go back to the bar. And that's one of the excuses that he gave everybody from the bar, that was that a man from the mob had came to their door the morning before looking for payment from his father. And then he came home from the bar and found everybody dead. You know, coming from somebody who knows a bit about the mob, they're very strict with their rules as far as that goes. And one of those big rules is you can go after the person if you have permission to. But the family is off. It's all about family with Italians.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you have an Italian last name. It's all about the family with Italians. And that's one thing you do not go after is the family. Unless the family is involved.
Yeah, I mean, Peter DeFeo, who was Ronald Jr.'s great uncle, he was part of the Genovese crime family. So they definitely did have mob ties. And what Ronald had said was he told police that Louis Fellini, a supposed mob hitman, had killed the family. That was the person that he actually named. But they debunked it because Fellini had an airtight alibi, you know?
Very solid alibi.
I'm not even really contesting the stuff that happened with DeFeo. You know, I mean, obviously, let's say he says that, you know, he claimed voices told him to kill the family. You know, he had all different kinds of defenses. The defense said that, you know, it was an insanity plea. Then at one point he said that his sister had helped him, his 18-year-old sister Dawn had helped him. His story changed many, many times over the...
Six times?
Exact. Wow.
Keep that in mind.
Okay. I mean, over the, what, 40-plus years that he was in jail? You know?
His story's changed, but the main excuses were six. So, yeah, the guy did it. He was a piece of shit, total piece of shit. He did it no matter... Like you said, who made him do it, the reason for doing it, he did it. I mean, I think that's without question, right? Now, it's the circumstances around the doing that are weird, that I don't like the gunshots. Nobody in the house heard it. Nobody outside of the house heard it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Where are most people at in their lives at the point of possession or, you know, flirting with that stuff? Where are they at in their life? They're not at the highest points, right?
No, actually, that's what the supposed demons, you know, prey on, are the people that are at their lowest point, basically.
Low-hanging fruit, man.
Yeah. Oh, and actually, that's a good segue to let you guys know that definitely keep out in the next couple weeks, because we're going to have an awesome interview with James Anito, who's a demonologist. So we'll get into some demonology stuff with him.
Sweet.
Absolutely. But yeah, no, they're definitely at their lowest point, you know, when they do get possessed, or, you know, start at least with the possession and then it builds, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I've never really done drugs in my life. You know, I was an athlete my entire life. I did try the weed thing one time. Worst thing I ever did in my whole life. I'll never do it again. I hated every second of it. I thought I was going to die. I freaked out, dude. And, you know...
Peer pressure got to you?
No, man. I was at this point.
I just wanted to try it.
I was like, yeah, I was younger and I was just like, yeah, let's try this, you know? And I hated it. I hated it. And I will never do it again. I think that when you I've been around people that are doing stuff like that. And I think there's a really, really, really fine line, right? When you're, I mean, some people take drugs just to get over that line to where they're in a different dimension, or they're in a different, they're seeing different things, you know, hearing different things. And nobody really knows what those things are. They're hallucinogens, of course, but are the things they're seeing actually real? You know, or are they not real? Because there have been people on trips that come back, you know, and they have real ass stories. You know what I mean? And you're like, wow. So who's to say that he's already down, he's doing these drugs, and something just came back with him from that other side, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. You know, and again, I don't discount kind of what happened with his story. My main thing is what happened a year later.
Okay.
That's my whole issue with the whole Amityville thing. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about a year later, after the murders. George and Kathy Lutz moved in December 1975, pretty much just like literally a year and a month after the murders. So they got the house at a ridiculously discounted price of like $80,000.
Yep.
And I mean, when I tell you that this house is beautiful, I mean, today, like if you go to it, I mean, it's gorgeous. It's first off, it's in a beautiful neighborhood, a 5-bedroom house, has a boathouse, attic, basement, you know, a secret red room where you could do your drugs like Ronald DeFeo Jr. did. You know, all this stuff. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful house. And
a sock room. Well, I mean, a secret red room. That's what.
That's right. And if you watched the first movie, you would know that red room was the gateway to hell, as the lady had said. So, yeah, I mean, it was a nice house, man. And they got it for $80,000, mm-hmm. which was insanely cheap because, hey, 6 people died in it last year, but let's move in your whole family, yeah. You know? So yeah, they claim that they were warned about the murders, but they chose to buy it anyway. They had the house blessed by Father Ralph Pecoraro.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I don't know why I don't have it. Well, two or three kids, right?
Three. Yeah, so they started, you know, experiencing crazy stuff almost immediately. Immediately, they started hearing voices, and I think that Daniel, the oldest son, was moving boxes into the house, and he went into a room that they called the toy room, was dropping boxes off in there, and he said that the whole room was filled with flies, and it's the middle of December. It's nothing to have your house filled with flies down here in the right. South in the middle of the winter, but up there it's a different story. You know what I mean? It's different. You know, you don't see that. And it freaked him out. He said he took a newspaper and was killing them. He said in 5 minutes he had 100 of them dead.
That's kind of a sign of possession, you know, infestation. Right. Correct. All right, go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
So he immediately ran down when he figured, you know, there's no way I can kill all these things. He said there was a pile of flies on the floor. He ran down and he told his mom, he's like, hey, this room up here is full of flies, you know? And his mom followed him back up and pretty much made a liar out of him because there wasn't a single fly in that room when she came back up, which was pretty crazy. Wow. And he said it always bothered him. And while I'm on this, have you ever watched, you've watched, of course, the Amityville Horror, and I'm sure some documentaries on it.
Right.
Have you ever watched My Amityville Horror?
Was that the documentary?
That's the one with Daniel.
No, I don't think I saw the one with Daniel. I saw the one with the Lutzes. I had seen that one.
Yeah. This will change your mind. I think it'll change your mind.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, that was from his account, from his documentary, that happened. Now, I will tell you, with this documentary, Daniel was not fond of George Lutz whatsoever. As a matter of fact, he hated his guts. Hated him, hated everything the man stood for, could not stand him, and there were lots of reasons for that. Still sticks to his story that this happened, man. Besides the point, as much as he, disdain as he has for George, this happened, which I find interesting.
At least in the movie, they showed George kind of, you know, getting possessed and starting to see, I guess, through DeFeo's eyes. You know, the house was kind of doing the same thing, and he kind of resembled Ronnie DeFeo. But going back to the, you know, what had happened in the house as well, though, you know, they had foul-smelling slime that was appearing on walls and in keyholes. George would wake up at 3:15 in the morning, you know, which was the time of, you know, which was the time of the DeFeo murders. There were some weird things, too. Kathy had experienced supposed levitation, a pig-like demonic creature named Jody appearing to the daughter, Missy.
And the whole family saw that pig as
well. Wow. Going back to that father that had blessed the house, he had actually said that he, and this was in the movie as well, that he alleged that he heard a very, very evil voice yelling at him to get out. And he had seen the flies as well.
Do you know how many times he heard that?
I do not know.
Three times.
Three times. Okay.
Yeah. Just keep that in mind.
Three. Okay. I'm not good. You tell me to keep in mind with six.
I'll come back to it.
Okay, good. Because I'm not good with numbers, man. I'm not good with numbers. That's why I work in a job where I only have to count up to 100, you know? But no, I mean, there was a lot of crazy things, but they only spent 28 days in that house, and then they fled in the middle of the night, leaving all of their possessions there, and supposedly never went back to that house ever again.
So I'll break it down. Let me break it down for you.
Go for it.
Here is a list of all the paranormal events that happened in this house, okay? Green slime oozing from the walls and the keyholes. The boathouse, the door would open and close, slam, open and close, open and close, open and close, over and over again, to the point where George would have to take Daniel out there and pick him up and have him hang on the door, and they'd both have to try to get it down because it wouldn't come down by itself. The dog was hung by that very door.
Wow.
Its leash got caught, and it hung him, hung the dog, killed it. Yeah, killed the dog. You know, we got the flies. Cold spots were found throughout the house without the heat being on. Women were said to have found a very welcoming and tranquil feeling in the house, like they loved the house. Every time a woman would come in, they'd go, "Oh my God, I love this house." Men would change immediately and become aggressive. It was another thing. Foul odors would come and go throughout the house. You mentioned the pig. You mentioned 3:15 a.m. Kathy Lutz levitating above her bed. They also said that Kathy Lutz would age intermittently. She would get older, get younger. This was witnessed by the entire family, including Kathy Lutz's mother, which I find pretty fascinating.
Wow.
George Lutz, his personality changed almost immediately when they came in the house. And he was obsessed with the fireplace and began neglecting his own business almost immediately. While I have that on the table, it kind of mirrors DeFeo, because DeFeo's family owned a very prominent, very good car repair shop.
Yeah.
And DeFeo was employed there and was supposed to take that business over. And instead of going to work, this guy would go to the bar every day and drink himself to sleep, you know? Got doors and windows opening and closing on their own, including, you know, the scene where Daniel gets his hand smashed in the windows. According to Daniel, that really happened, and he still has signs of it on his hands. You could see his hands. In that documentary, he shows his hands. His one finger is permanently disformed. Yeah, man. I mean, it's crazy. Scratches and welts all over Kathy Lutz's body would come intermittently between her aging spells. You mentioned the room. The dog actually refused to go in that room, the red room. Which is, to me, a sign. I always listen to my dogs. If my dogs ain't messing with it, I'm not messing with it, you know?
I have a Yorkie, man. He barks at everything, so It's like he barks at anybody, anything. It doesn't make a difference. So I can't rely on him. The cat, maybe. The cats are very intuitive, but cats are assholes. So you never know if they're, being truthful or not.
Plus, they have weird assholes. Have you ever seen a cat asshole? What's the weirdest freaking thing? Why are cat assholes so weird?
I wasn't even going with the physical asshole,
You said cat asshole, and that's immediately what they like to stick it in your face when you're petting them, And then you look at it and you're like, dude, that's the weirdest butthole I've ever seen in my life. What is going on with your butthole? Why does it look like that?
Oh, man.
I'm not wrong.
Listen, man. We can't go off the rails just yet. Okay.
All right. I'll reel it back in.
So they stayed for 28 days, right? And then they left abruptly. Okay. Now, not to jump too far ahead, but just to put this out there though, guys, every single owner that's had the house after them never reported anything paranormal. Now, could that be because nothing has happened, or is it because they don't want all the stuff going on and all the attention, media attention and stuff like that? It could be that too. People just don't care anymore. They deal with it kind of thing,
Can I tell you what I think?
Go for it.
I think you haven't heard anything because out of the Warren's own mouth, the house was exorcised.
Okay.
So that's why you haven't heard anything. The house was cleared. It was clean by the time they left.
This house is clear.
It's from Poltergeist. Right. That was my impression of that little lady.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Who, they got the... Anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. So that could be the reason why. My thing... Now, let me get into this now, man.
Yep, do it, man. You tell me all the reasons right now you don't believe this.
I feel that they made a mistake, and they realized that they made a mistake because his business was failing. George's business was already failing. He was a land surveyor. They don't make a ton of money, okay? They bought this house for 80 grand, which was a steal, but Suffolk County is, and especially Amityville, the taxes were pretty high back then, man. Where is it right here? The taxes were, add the taxes and everything, it was probably like, their mortgage was probably like $800-$900 a month, something like that, which is a lot of money for 1975. And I feel that halfway through, they realized, oh crap, we can't afford this house. We got to do something. And they left. And then they knew that the murders has happened, not too long after, actually only about a year later, a book came out by Jay Anson. And that was only a year after they had left. It's not like they had to wait three or 4 years. So even if they left, because I was looking, man, to see if there was any kind of stipulations, any kind of clause where if they left before a month that they wouldn't have to pay anything. But no, there wasn't.
Yeah, they actually went bankrupt after that.
But
because of that house.
Right. Okay. And that's the thing. But then they became, I wouldn't say rich. I don't think they became rich, but they did pretty well with the book sales.
Can I stop you there?
And the movie.
Right, so I'm going to debate
that. Go ahead.
So first of all, Lutz's business was flourishing before they moved into that house. And it was a family-owned business that had been in business for quite a while. And it was doing very well before they moved into that house. And then he began neglecting it. They were in the house 28 days, Joe. They didn't even get a chance to make a payment on this house. How can you be up to your ass in debt or behind when you haven't even been there a month?
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. You sat down and you looked and you said, maybe we rushed into this.
Why would you do that?
Like, though? Have you ever bought something and you're like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have bought that. And that's what I feel like. They saw 80 grand for this amazingly beautiful house with a boathouse and all this stuff.
All right, here we go. Let me get comfy. First of all, George Lutz was not a dumb guy. I'm not saying he was a smart guy. He was not a dumb guy. He was a United States Marine. He had been around the block a few times. He had a successful business. Sure, you buy stuff that you may have buyer regret later on, but not a goddamn house, man. You don't do that. That's not something you don't buy a house and then go, oh shit, like I messed up with this house. I shouldn't have bought this house. No, that's something that's got to be planned. That not only does it have to be planned, but you also have the bank involved who has an interest in that. And if they don't feel you're going to be able to make those payments, then they're not going to approve you for that. I'm not saying that they haven't done that in the past, you know, the big housing collapse, but still.
But they knew that ain't nobody going to buy this house that six people got brutally murdered in, especially a year later, you know? So I feel like they saw this family that's like, oh yeah, yeah, no, we're good. We're good. You know, we'll take it. And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, go ahead. You know, go ahead, take the house. You know, you could pay for it. You're good. All right, great. You know, that's what I think. I think it was kind of just, they were just like, oh, they were happy to get rid of that house, you know, cause I'm sure it was probably a stain for them, you know, to have there. Nobody wants to buy a murder house, you know?
And I understand. And I understand the thought process behind that. And I feel that it's really important in any case to be walk the middle line. You know what I mean? And look at things from both sides. And to a point, I can agree with you on that, you know, maybe they got in over their head thing. But I'll remain on my side and you remain on your side and we'll keep going with it.
All right, go on. You got more? Go for it, buddy.
No. What do you got next? What else aren't you believing about this?
Now, we've said it before, you know, that our podcast, we love the Warrens, and I always do. And I think that they're definitely good people and that they had, you know, good intentions with everything. Okay. But I feel like there were that infamous picture that, I mean, if you know anything about the Amityville house, you know anything about, you know, ghostly images, you know about the little boy picture on the steps or at the top of the steps or whatever you want to say near that doorway. I feel like that was not the little boy. Okay. Now, does it look like John? Yeah. Yeah, it does. It resembles John. It was, you know, his hair the same way. But to me, it also resembles one of the people that was on the team of the Warrens that day that picture was supposedly taken. And if you look at the crew, I can't think of his name. I was just trying to look for it before, but I couldn't get it. There was a man on the crew, had the exact same kind of checkered. Now, mind you, okay, mid-70s, we know that these plaid shirts, you know, the checkered shirts were huge then. Everybody was wearing them, kids, adults, everybody. But this guy was wearing that kind of shirt. He had the same kind of haircut as the little boy in the picture, and he was wearing glasses. And to me,
was he the same size as the little boy?
No, but it's hard to see, right? But to me, I feel like maybe he was bending down. This dude might have been bending down, you know, like fixing tape or whatever, you know, like fixing stuff. And the camera caught him or the camera went off or whatever. And to me, it just looks like a little boy. I feel like it's the adult from the crew.
Okay.
And that's, yep.
All right. I'll give you that. We'll give you that one.
And the glowing eyes would be reflections from the glasses.
All right. I could see that. Let me ask you something, Joe. Let's say your house all of a sudden became very actively haunted, okay? Just all of a sudden, you there with your wife and your daughters. All of a sudden, the activity ramped up. It started getting crazy as heck on you.
Okay.
And you're like, I got to get out of here. and you get your family and you get the hell out and you leave everything behind, right? First of all, would you do that? Would you just get up and leave everything behind? Take your family and leave? How bad would it have to be for you to do that?
Physical attacks on my family. You know, that's what it would have to take, I would think.
Take your family out of it. You've already got them to safety. Are you going back and getting your shit?
Now, am I who I am right now? Or am I just a normal, like, everyday Joe? You know? Me now, yeah, I'd come back in here. But I guess if I was, as for lack of a better term, a normal person. maybe not. Maybe I wouldn't, or I wouldn't go back in there by myself, at least.
Do you know anybody that's been in the Marine Corps?
Yeah.
Like, do you know them intimately, like pretty close?
Not really, no.
Okay. Well, I know several that have been in the Marine Corps, and I know several that have been in the Army, and I know several that have been in the Navy, and pretty much every armed force. Every one of them guys would go back in there. I know that they would. They'd go back in to get their stuff, okay?
Right.
Or at least try. All right. Now, say you don't, or you do get your stuff. That's besides the point. The point I'm trying to make is, let's say 4 months later, some guy comes up to you. Now, your family's safe. You have or don't have your shit. And he says, hey, I'm an author, and I would like to tell your story. I can make you some money. And you're like, how much money? Well, lots of money. You going to tell him no, Joe? Exactly.
No. No.
I'm not either.
No, absolutely not. Right. I mean, and that's what I feel, you know, had happened. I mean, that they were, as you said, they were bankrupt. They just, you know, left all their stuff. I'm sure they probably went back at some point. Or they had somebody go back at some point and get their stuff. I don't think that they left their stuff there forever. You know what I mean? I think that would be a little bit ridiculous. You know, like, I mean, it's your personal stuff. You know, I don't think you would.
It was auctioned off.
Everything was auctioned off?
Yes, sir. Mm.
Okay.
They wanted nothing to do with that house. As a matter of fact, the initial reporters that were at the case, the journalist, we're told that they didn't even want to talk about it at first. They didn't want to talk about it. They weren't looking for fame or fortune. They weren't looking for anything. Now, after the book, after the movie, oh, George Lutz rode that ride, though. He rode that ride. And I can't say I blame the guy. I probably would have too. You know, like we've talked about before, it's nice to be known for something, you know what I mean?
And it is one of the most infamous, you know, haunting possession things of all time, really. I mean, it's sure. Gonna people 100 years from now are gonna know about the Amityville Horror, you know, like it's you know, it's infamous, everybody knows about it. But let's talk about this though. The lawyer, Ronna DeFeo Jr.'s lawyer, was involved in it also. You know, he later claimed that the story was exaggerated and fabricated, the lawyer had said. And he had said that he publicly stated that the story was developed over wine, over many glasses of wine,
mm-hmm.
to help sell the book.
Yep.
Now, okay, I'm willing to put some stuff aside because you're not going to sell books if it's not exaggerated a little bit. It's got to be a little bit exaggerated if you're trying to sell a horror book or a haunting book. I guess, you know, a movie, a book, you have to embellish things. We've talked about that with the TV shows and stuff like that too.
Sure.
But this is supposedly, quote unquote, a true story. And they're saying that it was fabricated over many, many glasses of wine.
So, with all of that being said, the Warrens come in. Where do they fit into that scenario?
So, I mean, the Warrens were at the pretty much the height of their game at the time. They had just did the Conjuring House, mm-hmm. not too long before that, and you know they were called in to do the Amityville. And I think what they went there what twice maybe. I don't think they had as big of a role in it as people believe they did though. I know that they were there.
No, they visited the family in California when the family moved to California as well.
You know, but I don't feel like I feel like they had more to do with, you know, the Perrins than they did with the Amityville stuff. I don't doubt that the house is haunted because six people were brutally murdered there. I just don't feel that it was to the point that the Lutzes made it out to be. You know, those things that were talked about, slime coming down the walls, and you know, all it's. I feel like if that happened in that house, it would have happened in other houses, and we would have gotten some kind of more solid proof of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it was super fabricated, you know, super embellished. But again, yeah, it was probably haunted. I mean, was it haunted by, you know, demons that were telling, you know, Ronald DeFeo to kill people? I don't think so. I think if it is haunted, it was haunted by the family that had gotten brutally murdered there a year prior.
Can I throw you another scenario?
Of course.
Now, let's say we have a house that six people were brutally murdered in, okay? And then a family moves in. The father of that family, let's say he dabbled in the occult quite a bit, had books on Satanism and the occult and witchcraft, and you know, was pretty open to that stuff and dabbled in it. How does that change the scenario in your mind? Does it awaken something in the house and then make it haunted? Does the stuff that happened in that house now go, oh, look at this guy?
See, you got me on the fence here. And the reason why, mm-hmm. See, this, I knew this was going to be a good show, sir. You got me on the fence here because I'm thinking of my own. I mean, I don't dabble in Satanism and witchcraft and all that stuff, but doing a paranormal podcast, you know, things happen here, you know, like I've had experiences when I'm doing my podcast. So, and I've talked to, you know, Carl Johnson, the demonologist, had even said to me that if you talk about things, if you, you know, you can open up doors if you're not careful, you know? So
right.
Could it have? I mean, it's a possibility, but I just don't feel like, I don't know, man. I've seen a lot of things, but I've never seen slime coming down the walls before.
Let's say that said person bought the house because of what happened and because they dabbled in the occult. Now what?
That's an interesting point of view.
Because I'm just going to put it on the table right now. Daniel said in his own words in my Amityville Haunting that, let me remind you, to this day, he went on record on that documentary saying he's glad he's dead.
Wow.
Yeah, hated him, dude. Hated him. That George was 100,000% Satanism and everything else. I've got some books on my shelves about it too, you know, but I don't dabble in it. But he says the man was into it. How does that change things for you?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that could be a possibility.
It's a very complex case. Much more complex than just stupid movie and the stupid book. There's so much this that you can't fit into that.
It's only really hearsay. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't really any proof. I know, all right, the infamous picture, you know, of the little boy. But other than that, there wasn't really much proof. There was eyewitness accounts of certain people and, you know, here and there, but that's really all we got. You know, we don't really see anything, but, you know, I guess at the same time, you don't have to believe, you know, not all the time. Seeing isn't always believing all the time. So it could go either way, I think, you know. But
that's what she said.
Oh, snap. All right. So can I just jump in there and tell you what
sure
I notice about this that I feel is significant, and I feel like nobody's really looked at it. I mean, somebody could have, and I'm just not aware of it, but I'm about to get a little crazy.
Oh, I like that. I like it. You've been busy. All right.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah. That was my daughter. No, I'm joking. It wasn't. It kind of sounds like it. It's what I hear when she talks. Anyway. You got to shut it off sometimes, man. I'm a weirdo. Let's get that on the table. Don't call me Creepy Ken for nothing, okay? I will point a few things out to you that I am, I have ADD, ADHD, and with that, I am very observant, okay, with things, and things to the point where it bothers me, and then I go down rabbit holes. So with that on the table, there's one thing that kept bothering me and bothering me and bothering me about this case. And it wasn't just research now. It has always bothered me because, you know, when I was 12, 13, Amityville, man, I was in it. You mean the movies, the book, I've read the book. I don't know how many times, anything I could gobble up and ingest about this case I was in. And one thing that really bothered me was that there's a reoccurrence. And like I said, you can call me a weirdo. There's a reoccurrence of numbers that are troubling to me. Okay.
Okay.
So what I did was I took the numbers and then I said, you know what? I've never done numerology before. I'm going to do a little numerology. So I plugged her into a numerology thing and whew. I was like, what in the hell is going on? There's something going on here, man. So I'm going to start out with just the things that I notice, okay? Now, I remember I told you to remember 6, and I remember 3, okay?
Correct.
3 and 6 pop up in this case so many times it isn't funny, all right? Here's the things I noticed. So, the time of the murders, what time?
3 o'clock in the morning.
How many people?
6.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many floors in the house?
3.
Correct.
Okay.
How many bedrooms in the house? You were wrong earlier.
I was wrong?
Yes, sir.
My co-pilot is never wrong.
6 bedrooms.
Okay.
Okay. He used a 35mm Marlin 3.5. He had access to 3 firearms. There were 3 males and 3 females killed. All right? You following me here?
I'm following.
Yeah. The priest heard "get out" 3 times. Jody, the pig, was seen 3 times by family members. All the cold spots we spoke about?
Mm-hmm.
6 rooms.
Okay.
Kathy Lutz placed 6 crucifixes around the house for protective measures. Ah, this is all before numerology, which is crazy. So, We got 3 stories, 6 dormer windows, and 6 bedrooms. Okay? We have a central peak with 3 visual points of interest. 2 windows and an entrance that looked like a face. Interesting. There were 3 major investigations into this case. News media, the Warren team, and a team of parapsychologists. 3 main major cultural retellings of the story. The book and the 2 movies. Actually 3 movies, but part 2 didn't count. The sequel didn't count.
There were actually a lot of movies, weren't there? Wasn't there like one with the time or something? Or about time or something like that?
It doesn't really count, but we'll get into there. To me, it doesn't count. The major retellings of the main story. there were 6 theatrical releases over 3 decades. Okay. Every 6 years, the public interest resurges with pretty much the films in the revival. 1979, 1985, 1991, 2005, 2011, and 2017. All of the shows or retellings always have a set of 3 investigators. Now, we're grabbing a little bit there. All right. So those are the core patterns. All right.
Okay.
Now, if you get into the numerology side, it gets even weirder, man. It gets even weirder. So without going too crazy, November 13th, 1974. Okay. Let's just go with November 13th. 1 + 3 = 4. The month was 11 plus the day, which is 24.
Okay.
2 + 4 = 6. And it just goes on and on and on with 3s and 6s. Okay. It's just crazy. Even right down to the address, 112. Well, the numerology, you leave off the first one. 1 + 2 = 3.
Right.
They stayed for 28 days. You know, 4 weeks in total. It just goes on and on and on. 3:15 a.m. is when George kept waking up.
Okay.
They're all divisible by 3. Which is, it's just, man, it goes on. It's just, it gave me the creeps once I got into the numerology part. Because I had noticed all of the 6s and 3s before. And then when you add that, it gets even creepier.
Well, we'll have to do a show on numerology at some point. I don't really know anything about it, so I'm going to have to do some research. But I know, I mean, as long as we can make it interesting, I don't know. I've never been a math guy, so talking about numbers kind of puts me to sleep a little bit sometimes. So as long as we can make it.
I know a girl who's into it. Oh, that sounds, hey, okay. Joe, I know a girl who's into it,
she's
man.
Some yeah, freaky numerology stuff.
She's into it. No, but what I'm saying is without the numerology, even you, really the last 2 things are the only 2 numerologies that I gave you because I don't want to bore everybody with numerology. But without that, I mean, 3s and 6s everywhere. You got, okay, right? 3s and 6s. Now, the number of the beast is what?
Okay, so the number of the beach is, wow.
The number of the beach.
The number of the beast is, of course, 666. And yeah, you know, the 3.
That's 6 3 times, right?
Right. And then the 3 is, you know, mocking the Holy Trinity type thing. You know, the demons do that. So yeah, I get where you're going with that. I don't know. As far as that, I'm going to need a little bit more convincing, I think, as far as that goes. Because like numbers, it's like we could do a whole show on the, you know, on the Kennedy, John F. Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln thing, you know, that you know, one yeah. had a secretary named Lincoln, the other one had a secretary named Kennedy and all this, you know.
I agree.
But there are coincidences in the world, too, you know, but some people say that there are no coincidences. But, you know, I don't know.
Listen, I'm just telling you something that I noticed before all this, before I even knew what numerology was and really what I gave you wasn't numerology. If you just look at this case and look at the numbers involved in this case and the weirdness, there's a pattern, man. There's a pattern of 3s and 6s. And I just listed, you know, almost all of them. And that's a lot, Joe. I mean, it's really a lot. I just always found it strange that there's 3s and 6s throughout this whole case. And it's always kind of bothered me. And I just wanted to put that out there.
I appreciate that. And I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. No, I mean, it's definitely the whole 3:15 thing. And like, that's one thing, you know, they say that, George Lutz would wake up at 3:15. That's when the murders had happened. I feel like that's something, you know, but again, to me, that goes by, all right, well, you know, it's the family doing it, you know? Do we know anything yep. about where this house was built? Was it really built on an Indian burial ground? You know, we don't, I mean, come on. Like every haunted yeah. house is built on an Indian burial ground, you know? Exactly.
Ever since Poltergeist came out.
So, I mean, is it? I don't know. I don't, I honestly, seriously doubt that. But we don't know. We don't know. I hope you enjoyed the show. And please check out all of our other shows on warpedrealityparanormal.com. Check out our YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook groups, and all that good stuff. We have plenty more stuff coming at you. A lot of great interviews coming at you as well. So definitely stay tuned for
that. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And yeah, guys, so have a great week, and we will see you next week. And it's getting closer to Christmas, so we're going to have to think of a cool Christmas episode also. Maybe we'll have
to... I thought of one the other night.
Is it about our boy Krampus? Are we going to do a whole episode on Krampus? No.
No, no. Krampus.
He's whack.
No.
That was a terrible.
I mean, we could do Krampus, but I thought of one the other night. I'm just, I wrote it down in the list, and I have to find it.
We'll talk about that off air.
Drinking a little bit tonight.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, everybody, we'll see you guys next week, and have a great one. Later.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of our guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more information on the show, to listen to every episode, read paranormal news, or to submit your paranormal experience, check out warpedrealityparanormal.com. You could also email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.